Gillette's best blades can save you up to 50% versus the other shave club's $9 per month plan. That's right. Close, comfortable, smooth, and up to 50% off versus the other shave club. Join today at GilletteShaveClub.ca.
It's At The Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
It's At The Letters for Tuesday, March 15th in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I am joined, as always, by Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, we are back in the same room in Toronto, back on Tuesdays. It's all happening for ATL.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've been in the regular studio. We did a couple over the phone. We did one from the broadcast booth in Bradenton. Here we are, back to normal.
Did one in a rental car that nobody is ever going to hear. We've done a lot of things, but we're getting there. We're almost there. It's March 15th. We're like, I think we're past the halfway point of spring training. By this point, there is less spring training. There's less time between now and the start of the regular season than there is between now and what was the start of spring training. If you know what like crazy convoluted logic I'm trying to get through here.
I know what you're saying. And it's, it is true. I mean, there are a couple weeks of games and then that's it.
I'm getting loopy.
Yeah.
I'm getting crazy. It's time. It's time to go. It's time for games. It's time for people to be upset that, you know, Kevin Pillar is 0 for the week or whatever it is, right? Like, it's time for things to happen, for us to actually have actual, like, information and things and results. I'm tired of this fake stuff.
Yeah. Even though the fake stuff is surprisingly interesting, I'm always surprised by how much there is to watch for in spring training. You know, every single game there's, unless it's like R.A. Dickey and okay, you know what you're getting from him. It's right. There's not a lot of intrigue, but the games where you have Gavin Floyd and Aaron Sanchez starting, there's some serious intrigue there.
So give us something then. I mean, you just got back. You just finished your tour of duty in Dundee. Me and Shy were down there first, and then you went down. And right now we got Blair and Brunt down there, and then Shy will be back there. And on. It never ends. But give us something. Give us some intrigue here from your time down there. What stuck out to you?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, Saunders looks really good. Floyd looks good. Sanchez looks good. There's room for concern with some other guys, Estrada and Encarnacion. And guys like Pillar and Bautista and Donaldson are doing their thing. And, you know, this is going to be a good team. If they're healthy, they're going to be a really good team. I firmly believe that.
It's strange because from a results standpoint, it's been, I mean, everyone's pitching well. Guys are, for the most part, are like hitting well. Like Darwin Barney and Michael Saunders are like hitting the cover off the ball. Though I guess Barney's slowed down a bit, but like Saunders is still, you know, crushing it to all fields. You know, there's nobody who's like, oh, this guy is like 0 for his first 20 or something like that. And nobody really went out there. No pitcher really went out there and got lit up. And like results in spring training are, you know, worth what they're worth. But, you know, I guess it's good.
Here's the other thing. If you're watching Aaron Sanchez and he was throwing 95 last year and walking guys.
Yeah.
Again, yeah, it's spring training, but he's not walking guys. He's throwing 96 and 98. He's throwing the curveball for strikes. All those things are good signs for someone who entered the spring with a lot to prove.
Also spring training, though, those hitters are swinging. Not a lot of guys looking to take walks.
Yeah, and to be fair, those hitters may have spent last year in AA or in AAA. I mean, there's a huge diversity of talent level when it comes to spring training games. So, again, you have to take it with a grain of salt. But I think, honestly, for the Blue Jays, up until this Encarnacion news, which we'll get into, I think it was a very good spring training for them, especially compared to last year. By this time last year, they had lost Saunders. They had lost Stroman. They were scrambling. I think they're in a much better position now than they were then.
So what you're saying is law of averages says something terrible is about to happen.
Who knows? Who knows?
That is the biggest thing with spring training. Nobody has gotten hurt except for Edwin Encarnacion. News coming down just before we came in to record this, actually. I heard it on like the loudspeaker as I walked into the building. Edwin Encarnacion shut down for a week with an oblique strain. I didn't see any specifics of whether it's a right or left oblique, but it really doesn't matter. It's an oblique strain, which is not something that you really want to hear from anybody in baseball, because the obliques, the midsection, the core, withstands quite a bit of pressure, whether you're a pitcher, whether you're a hitter. It's something that's very vital to you. I would imagine that when Edwin Encarnacion was going through the kind of the abscessed tooth scenario, that this was something that was bothering him as well, because he really hasn't done that much since the tooth thing. So maybe, you know, they just saying, yeah, no, it's just a tooth, when, you know, really there was this oblique thing all along. Who knows? I mean, Ben, what's the level of concern for you on this one?
Well, I think the level of concern should be pretty high for the Blue Jays. And I guess I say that because this team is going to be really, really good if their big bats are healthy. Mm-hmm. If their bats aren't healthy, then they look much more beatable. And Encarnacion's a huge part of that after hitting 39 homers last year and really being peak Encarnacion, especially toward the end of the year. And I think one thing to remember in this is that Encarnacion toward the end of the year was playing banged up and he was producing. He had the finger issue. He had a core muscle operation after the season, and that's something that he was playing through as well. So he can play through pain, but at this point, if he's back in games, let's say March 22nd, best case scenario, at that point, you're bumping up on the regular season. And I don't know about you, but to me, I'm not assuming that he's going to be in there opening day.
So it's March 15th today as we record this, and they're saying that he's going to be down for a week, like shut down for a week, like no activity for a week. So say he starts activity again on the 22nd. I don't think your first activity is going to be in a game. Your first activity is going to be, all right, swing, you know, dry swing, swing off a tee, you know, this and that, you know, stand in for live VP, whatever. Like, and then you ramp up. So, but on the 22nd, you've got basically a little more than a week until the Blue Jays opener on April 3rd. In Tampa, what have you got? You got a week and a half, not two weeks. So say you get him into games with like a week left in the spring training. You're not going to play him in every single one of those games. So you get him into five or six, multiply that by three. You're like best case scenario, 22, 23 at bats, best case scenario. That's not enough.
No,
I don't think that the Blue Jays can say Edwin Encarnacion is going to be ready for opening day. I would be shocked.
Yeah, there's reason for some real skepticism there. And I think you lined it up. Unless there's some development where he feels great and can accelerate his timetable, it's going to be a challenge for him to get the requisite at-bats. Now, the Blue Jays think that Encarnacion's a guy who doesn't need as many at-bats as a lot of hitters, and maybe there's some validity to that. But there's a difference between getting, 30 or 40 at-bats, which is, you know, down from the 60 or 65 that some guys would get. 30 or 40 is a lot different than 20. You know, 20 is just, that's a handful of games. That's not necessarily enough to regain timing after months away from regular game action.
No, and Edwin Encarnacion's a guy who, you know, when he's right, I mean, he's all world, right? Like he's masterclass at the plate. But then, you know, when he's not, when he doesn't have his timing, when he is carrying little injuries, you can almost see like his swing like coming apart at the seams, right? You kind of see like the pieces of it kind of being stripped away, you know, like when he's carrying that thumb thing and, you know, he's finishing his swing with one hand on the bat, you know, and things like this. Or when you see him wincing on, you know, follow throughs, or, you know, when he's carried those kind of some of the problems he's had in his hamstrings and his thighs, you know, when he's trying to get down down the first base line and he can't do it. Like, this is a guy that you want right, especially at this point going into the season. I mean, because you don't want this to be like in June, you know, Edwin Encarnacion to the disabled list with, you know, his oblique thing is flaring up again. Like, you don't want this to be recurring throughout this year. Edwin Encarnacion certainly doesn't want it to be recurring through this year in a contract year of all years. This is something that you need to get right now. So, yeah, I don't think he's going to be ready for opening day at all. Maybe that's good news for somebody in the fourth outfield competition. Maybe that's good news for, you know, if you're junior, you know, if Ezekiel Carrera is going to be your fourth outfielder, maybe that's good news for Junior Lake. You know, maybe that's good news for Siciliani, somebody like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it could be. And it depends on how they go about it. Like, say Encarnacion is still kind of questionable toward the beginning of April. They could either roster him and ease him into games and try to manage his oblique that way, or they could DL him, backdate it by a few days. Maybe you bring him back after the 11th. At that point, you have a couple off days and you're getting into a stretch where you have a lot of games. So, you know, I guess it would depend on whether they were to decide, all right, even if Encarnacion doesn't have as many at-bats as usual, they could still decide to put him on the roster. But first base really is a position, because of Smoke, because of Colabello, that they're actually reasonably deep at. Yeah. It's probably their deepest position when you think about it.
That's a good point.
So maybe that would be a cause, if this thing lingers, where you do start thinking DL, at that point, those fourth outfield candidates would have to be prominently considered for opening day roster spots.
That's not the worst thing in the world, to have Chris Colabello and Justin Smoke playing, you know, every day first base DH for the first, you know, 15 days of the season. Like, these are like normal team problems, right?
Exactly.
Like, you know, like not having your, like, you know, borderline like MVP guy, you know, one of the many on your team You know, it's pretty first world stuff.
It is, and compared to other positions. I mean, what if Russell Martin was out with an oblique issue?
That's not good.
That's really, or Josh Donaldson. Then you have a problem, you know, that's much harder to patch up even for a week.
Hello, Matt Dominguez.
Yeah.
And this is the thing with Edwin Encarnacion is he seems to always be carrying something, whether we've mentioned the thumb issues, you know, he's had the quad issues, you know, this oblique thing. He had hernia surgery after the season last year. I mean, just like this, and credit to Edwin Encarnacion, like he plays through it and he gets up to, you know, 140 games every year, but always carrying something. And this is maybe one of the reasons why the Blue Jays are, you know, going to approach any contract negotiations with him tepidly. And certainly wouldn't, you know, be, I don't think there's the same, you know, it's a factor.
That's a great point, because when you look at the rest of spring training, he's going to be rehabbing, and yet there's still that deadline, that spring training deadline on, let's say it's April 2nd, April 3rd. That's when the Blue Jays have to have a contract hammered out with him, or he's hitting free agency. And this is going to be happening while he's trying to build strength back from this oblique injury.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe if you start him on the 15-day deal, you buy another 15 days onto that.
That's a good question.
Into that negotiating window.
Yeah.
Another guy, you know, we can spin this into Marco Estrada, this guy who's kind of battled back tightness, is kind of what it's officially being called throughout spring. Hasn't been in a live game yet, but I do understand that you're saying he's thrown live BP.
Yep, threw live BP against a couple prospects on Saturday, and he's pitching in minor league games as of this week, and then the hope would be to get him three major league starts before spring training ends.
I'm less worried about this one. I'm interested to hear your take. I'm less worried. Like, Marco Estrada isn't a big, like, he's not a real high maintenance pitcher. You know, he's like, he doesn't throw super hard, like, you know, relies on off speed. You know, if he got three starts at major league spring training, say he goes two innings, three innings, four and a third or whatever, even if his first, you know, time out through the rotation, which might not even come in that first week, by the way, because the Blue Jays could go with a four-man rotation right out of the gate with the off days that they have. Even if his first time out in the season, he's limited to 95 to 100 pitches before they really, like, take the reins off of him, I'm okay with that.
Yep, especially because the bullpen at that point should be reasonably rested. You rest them toward the end of spring training. You have an off day the 7th. You have an off day on the 11th of April. Those are two early off days. So you can lean on the bullpen a little bit more. But I guess with Estrada and Encarnacion, there's always that uncertainty because teams downplay injuries routinely. And sometimes, you know, with Aaron Loop, oh yeah, it's just a little soreness. He's going to be back soon. Okay, now it's 2 weeks. And then what? I mean, is it really 2 weeks or is it longer? So I think there's room for skepticism when it comes to injuries, generally speaking. I'm not talking about Estrada in particular here. He seemed to feel great and he looked good in that simulated game that we watched on Saturday. And by all accounts, he's making progress. But overall, you got to be skeptical when a team says, oh yeah, he's fine, he just needs a couple days, because they're not going to come out and publicly tell us every detail.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the thing is that just every interaction I've had with Marco since the beginning of spring, it's like hasn't been an issue. Like, he just doesn't seem worried about it at all. And he's one of the lowest maintenance guys around. And yeah, I don't think he's going to pitch in that first run that you just said. I don't think he's going to pitch at all. Which is fine. Totally okay. I bet you he'll be on the roster. I think he'll be fine. And yeah, you mentioned Aaron Loop. We might as well talk about him now. You know, there's some mystery around that. You never like to hear about forearm strains, certainly. You never like to hear about any kind of tightness or soreness in that area, because, you know, everything in there is kind of connected, and it all, you know, connected to the elbow and to the ligaments in there. And, you know, depending on how you pitch and how much you pronate or supinate, it puts a lot of stress on that area. We haven't really heard from Aaron Loop since then. I don't know if you were down there more recently, but I haven't. Did you hear anything?
No, I mean, the latest is he's just resting up for a couple of weeks. Yeah. So at this point, he's got another week of rest, and then they'll see how he feels, probably throw a side session and go from there. But really, he's not going to break camp with this team. So the Blue Jays are going to have to find another way to get left-handed batters out in the middle innings.
That, I think, would fall onto one Pat Venditti, perhaps, who I think has kind of separated himself as a pretty legitimate candidate for this bullpen. Maybe Chad Giroto is another lefty who, even like back to last year during the playoffs when Loop was gone with, he was on bereavement leave. I don't know what actually there wasn't like a leave set up or anything like that, but they're thinking about holding them off of the roster at one point. Chad Giroto's name came up. Randy Choate, a guy that the team just signed. I'd say all options to fill that left-handed Rule.
I think those are the three. I think those are the three names you look at. Where you have Vendetti, and he's very good against same-handed batters. As a guy with options, he might not make the opening day roster. Yeah. Maybe you just shuttle him back and forth all season long. But I really believe we're going to see a good amount of Vendetti at some points this year. And then you've got Jurado, another guy with options, another guy who I think we'll see contribute this year. You mix in Randy Choate, they're going to see what he has left. And maybe he could be in a game as soon as the end of this coming week, which would position him to make 4 or 5 appearances. If he's throwing 83 mile an hour slop, then he's not going to be on this team. But if he's actually got some bite to it and he can, face some lefties and show that he has something left, I could see him taking him. And then that way you stash the other two guys in Buffalo and you have a couple contingency plans should Choate end up struggling.
Yeah, and you don't really owe that much to Randy Choate, right?
Oh, nothing to him. Yeah.
Nothing. That was strong then. Yeah, no, you're right. You don't own anything to him, and I'm frantically looking for his velocities last year. He averaged below 85 on the fastball last year. That's not good. You don't like that. So we'll see what he's got left. He is a 40-year-old man. But this is what it's come down to. Like as much as the Blue Jays have built up their depth in certain areas, there are certain areas where that depth is non-existent. I would say backup catcher, not a lot of depth there. It seems like, a left-handed arm in the bullpen. And like, obviously these guys don't grow on trees, but we were talking about this last year about how there needs to be a lefty in this bullpen beyond Aaron Loop, who, Aaron Loop for 2 years basically threw 70 innings each year and was really, really good. And I think last year, maybe you started to see that workload catch up to him. And now this year with the forearm strain at the beginning of spring training, another indication that maybe, he was really leaned on for the Blue Jays for those 2 years. And, you can't pitch forever.
Yeah. And I think he was going to have a bounce back type of season after allowing really a career high in batting average on balls in play. I think he was positioned to surprise some people and rebound in that role. The good thing for the Blue Jays is he was never going to be that eighth inning, huge out kind of guy. He was going to be counted on. You have two on and two out in the sixth inning. Your starter's tiring. Lefty's up. That's when Aaron Loop comes into the game. So they need someone to fill that role, and it doesn't have to be someone who pitches 50 innings. I mean, that's where Choate comes in. He's a one-out guy. He's the classic lefty one-out guy. And if he can find some of that ability that led him to a long major league career and sustain that even for 2-3 months, even for 2 or 3 weeks, I mean, that would be enough to help the Blue Jays start the season with some lefty options.
I'd so much rather have Pat Venditti. Just thinking about it just in my head right now, like in terms of just where the games go, like I feel like those one out guys, like it's just not, it's a different era now. And I'd much rather have a guy who gives me more, especially a guy like Pat Venditti, who can throw from both sides, who can go longer. I understand he's got options, and if you bring Choate north, you get to keep both guys, and like that's great, and you're maximizing this and that. Let's just take Venditti.
Yeah, he certainly looked better. He's got to be ahead in the competition at this point, because he's looked very good. And I really think we're going to see a lot of Pat Venditti this year.
The other spot in the bullpen that would appear to be open would be kind of like that kind of low leverage, medium leverage kind of right-hander guy. Joe Biagini, an option there. I don't know, Steve Delabar, Ryan Tepera. I mean, you were down there most recently. How's the wind blowing when it comes to that one?
That's a great question. It's tough to find exactly which way the wind is blowing, but I think Biagini has opened eyes. Anytime you're a Rule 5 pick, you have maybe an edge. You're certainly going to get looks as a Rule 5 pick. Biagini pitched very well. 95-mile-an-hour fastball, throwing strikes, curveball that's got some bite to it. So he's opened eyes. I think he's going to earn consideration. Same goes for Arnold Leon. And again, this is a guy who's out of options. So this is your chance to roster him, essentially. Throws 91, 92, maybe 93. He's someone who intrigued the Blue Jays when they acquired him from Oakland in the offseason. Delabar, we know who he is and what he offers. And I think that one of these guys is going to end up getting the spot. I think Delabar, I think it's going to be a challenge for him to make the team. I don't see him making it. I don't see Tepera making it because he has options. One of the few relievers with options.
Right.
So you're looking at Biagini, Leon. And as for which way the wind is blowing, I don't know. But I think those guys are going to get some consideration.
It seemed for a while there's been kind of a parting between Steve Delabarre and the Blue Jays, like, and it seemed like there really isn't much of a future for him with the Toronto Blue Jays, and it seemed that way for, you know, even last year, right? Like, didn't get the September call up, he felt pretty chided by a few things last year. I agree with you on that one on Delabarre. Biggini's an interesting guy. Was when the Rule 5 draft happened, was this in the Ross Atkins era, or was he a Cava pick?
It was Atkins's first move, arguably, as GM.
So that says something. Like, this is clearly a guy that, you know, maybe Cleveland was going to take him. You know,
yeah,
if
could be.
Ross Atkins didn't come here. You know, clearly they like him. Anytime you're up to 95, 96, you know, he hasn't been above Double A. But last year at AA, a 2.42 ERA in pitching as a starter, actually 22 starts. So that's kind of interesting.
He's never really pitched in the bullpen.
Yeah.
So this is it's a new look. And I think that it's tough to work out trades for Rule 5 picks because the Giants might very well just want him back. But if there's any way the Blue Jays could work out a trade, I think that would be a very wise move.
If the Blue Jays were to bring him north, and then decide like April 16th, like we don't have a spot for him anymore. Does Zeus go back to the Giants then? Or what?
They'd have to offer him back, yeah.
Right.
So you have to keep him all season. If you do keep him all season, then you have him and he has options. And for 2017 and beyond, he's all yours. But there's that first season. And for a team that's trying to compete, they've got to make the choice that's going to leave them with the strongest overall club.
It does kind of limit your flexibility a little bit, having a guy that, you know that if he's, you know what I mean? Like, he has to be on your major league roster. And if he's not going to be, then you don't have the same options that you have with other guys. So I don't like how that limits the flexibility, but I also just kind of advocated just a few minutes ago in the Randy Choate discussion against flexibility. So I don't know.
You got to take the guys that are going to help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to take the guys that are going to help you. And I think, you know, to focus on opening day and say, opening day has to be the best roster possible. To me, that misses the point a little bit. I think what you have to do is you set yourself up for the first, say, couple months of the season. What are the ways that the Blue Jays can make their roster strongest, including optioning guys, including out of options, Rule 5, considering all of that? How do you make the roster best for the first 60 or so games? Trying to look beyond that is really a fool's errand.
It doesn't matter how you start. It matters how you finish.
Well, it matters how you start, too.
Wouldn't you say, though, like in April as a major league team, like if you get out of April just 15-15,
yeah,
you're happy.
Right. The Jays were 500 after 4 months last year. Yeah. And this is a good enough team. They know this, too. This is a good enough team that if they come out of the gate and they're a little bit slow, they're going to be okay. They're a very talented team. And there are questions that really loom over the team beyond 2016 as far as Bautista and Encarnacion. Do they have enough talent? But for this year, this is a really good team.
It's scary, but it's also exciting. I feel like that's the feeling for a Blue Jays fan right now is like, oh my God, we have this like incredible team right now, but oh my God, it might all fall apart.
Yeah, it could. It could. And they're a couple injuries away, but I think that on paper, they look like a very good club.
Yes. Yes, they do. And we're going to talk more about that club with a particular focus on the starting rotation when we come back on At the Letters.
Sportsnet Magazine. Here's Stephen Brunt.
Sinaloa. Say the name and a string of words naturally follow. Cartel. El Chapo. Drugs. Murder. But Sinaloa is also Mexico's baseball hotbed and the home of the Toronto Blue Jays' Roberto Osuna, who last year, as the youngest player in the major leagues, wound up as the team's unlikely closer during a sensational run to the postseason. When we arrived in his hometown, Los Mochis, we were greeted at the airport by our own personal security force carrying M16s. The authorities weren't leaving anything to chance. Wherever we went, including a particularly dangerous little town called Juan José Ríos, where Osuna was born, our cops followed. As the visit proceeded uneventfully, it all began to seem like overkill. Meanwhile, we were welcomed into the Osuna family home. We went to the beach, and we went to the ballpark where Roberto's father played during a long career in the Mexican professional leagues. And we also went to the two-room house where the family was living when Roberto dropped out of school at age 12 to work as a farm laborer with his father and concentrate on becoming a ball player. Everything was peaceful, tranquilo, just as the chief of police promised us it would be. Muy tranquilo. Then, one morning, we woke to the sound of helicopters. And suddenly, the whole world was talking about Los Mochis.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet magazine on newsstands now. And available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones.
Theater strikes out. He forgot his trigger.
Well, that's just a case of being absolutely overmatched.
And another deep grounder. Bones gobbles it up. Sanchez breezing early on. No problem at all.
We'll see what happens this year. I can't control the decisions they make, so I'm just going to go out there and continue executing pitches and pitching the way I have. They'll make that decision. Glavin's throwing pretty well. So it comes down to what makes the team better. If they feel that's me in the pen, then I guess that's what we'll figure out when the time comes.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling with Ben Nicholson-Smith on Sportsnet.ca, also on iTunes. You know how to get us by now. The big kind of topic of conversation right now, I guess, as spring training trudges on, is the fifth spot in the rotation. It's been the topic of conversation since the start of spring training. It's going to be the topic of conversation when the team goes to Montreal and then back to Tampa. Which is kind of weird at the end of the... I like how they go from Florida to Montreal for 2 days and then go back to Florida at the end of spring training.
Picking up those air miles.
That sucks. I would say that this kind of fifth spot in the rotation is now come... It's going to be Gavin Floyd. I'll come out and say it. Gavin Floyd is going to be the fifth starter on the Toronto Blue Jays. And what that means for Aaron Sanchez is kind of where we go from here. Maybe something will change over the next 2 weeks, but I think that this front office really likes Gavin Floyd as a starter. He's got that major league deal, and I really believe that's where it's going
to
go.
So before we go to the Sanchez, I feel like let's get more of your thoughts here on Floyd. And Floyd's looked good. He struck out 5 3 innings in his most recent start. He kind of has that, if you want to go down this path, he's got that durable starter's frame. Not that he's been durable in recent years, but he certainly looks the part. He is the four-pitch mix. But what is it that leads you to say that you're expecting Floyd to be that starter?
I think the front office really likes him. I think they like his repertoire as a starter more so than Aaron Sanchez's. I think they like the fact that he has, that he has four pitches, that he can flip up a first-pitch changeup if he has to, that he can attack your back foot with a slider, that he's more of a pitcher than, say, an Aaron Sanchez who's just going to kind of let his two-seamer eat in the zone and then, break off like the biggest curveball you've ever seen in your life, which is a terrific curveball. But that's really what Aaron Sanchez is, two-seamer curveball.
He's mixing in changeups and cutters.
Not a great changeup, not a great cutter. Where I feel like Gavin Floyd's secondary stuff they're better weapons than Aaron Sanchez's. Aaron Sanchez probably has if you put all their pitches together, Aaron Sanchez has the two best pitches in his two-seamer and his curveball. But Gavin Floyd has a better mix. If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. It's a more refined mix. It's something that he has used effectively in games.
And I think that's what the front office likes more so about him. And I think that the front office probably also much prefers Gavin Floyd's pedigree as a starter, as a guy who has, done 200 innings in the past and a guy who has, been through orders time and again. And, like Aaron Sanchez, what has he shown? Last year he showed that he wasn't durable as a starter. And he showed that, he didn't have his command some days. And he worked really hard this offseason. I was down. I was in Duke.
Right.
I was in Durham with him. I saw the work he put in. And he worked really, really hard to be a starter. Personally, like my personal opinion, I want to see Aaron Sanchez start. I just don't think it's going to happen this year.
So devil's advocate to the Floyd argument here would be that Sanchez entered spring with some questions surrounding what he could do. And to me, he's answered a couple of those questions with the ability to throw strikes with his secondary stuff, particularly his curve, which has come along very nicely in the last couple outings. And he hasn't walked a lot of guys. This is someone who really struggled with command early as a starter in the 2015 season. And now he's not walking guys. He's attacking the zone and he's getting swings and misses. He's throwing harder than he was last year, throwing 96, 97, 98. Last year, he averaged 95. So there's a lot to like there. And Sanchez really wants it for what that's worth. He sees himself as a starter. So you can make the case that seeing what he can offer in the rotation would help the Blue Jays. And then you have Floyd in the bullpen as an insurance policy slash long reliever. That would be the case for Sanchez.
Yes, absolutely. The case for Sanchez is also that going forward, the Toronto Blue Jays organization has more invested in Aaron Sanchez and really need, like, they have more to gain by finding out what he could be going forward as, you know, as a starting pitcher. This is a guy who's been with the Blue Jays since he was 17. He's 23 now, and he's just like competing for a spot in the rotation. So this is a guy who's been carefully developed. They completely reworked his mechanics, completely reworked his delivery. They piggybacked him with, you know, Nicolino and Syndergaard back in the day. And, you know, they brought him along really slowly. This is in the Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins mold. Like, this is like a guy, you know, they've polished and refined and brought this guy forward. So I like Aaron Sanchez as a starting pitcher. That's what I want to see. But I just, you know, just kind of reading the tea leaves and seeing how things are going. Like, I see him being in the bullpen. I think the team likes having that, you know, kind of four-headed monster at the back of things, you know, and then, you know, you can kind of back off Brett Cecil's workload a little bit, back off Roberto Osuna's workload, Drew Storen's workload, you know what I mean? Like, just kind of distribute things a bit more evenly. And, you know, I think that's just kind of where they want him. But I agree with everything you said. I want to see Aaron Sanchez as a starter. I think I'm probably going to have to wait until 2017 to see it.
Yeah, and that's the wrinkle too, is if you start Sanchez in the bullpen, then it would be challenging. I'm not going to say impossible, but it would be a challenge to make him into a starter midway through the year. That'd be tough.
The other option would be to send him to Buffalo and have him start at Buffalo and just kind of be ready and be that insurance policy. You know what I mean? And then be ready to step into the rotation. I don't think that's what the Blue Jays want to do. But, you know, what do you think? Like, do you think that the Blue Jays are, you know, I don't know if handcuffing is the word for it, but, you know, screwing themselves a little bit in terms of what Aaron Sanchez could be going for? Like you said, a guy with 97, 98, a terrific breaking ball. Like, you know, this is like, you look at what, you know, you look at Chris Sale in the first 2 years of his career, right? Pitching as a reliever in the same role Aaron Sanchez was at, you know, in that kind of eighth inning role. And then now here he is, you know, high velocity, big breaking ball, like, you know, the two things kind of line up.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost beyond best. Chris Sale would be amazing, amazing as an outcome for Aaron Sanchez. Even if he could be a starter who goes, say, 160 to 180 innings with an ERA of 3.8,
right,
as opposed to Sale's 2.3.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be a big step forward, a big success for Sanchez if he does end up in that role. As for the Buffalo question, I mean, I think Sanchez will be on the big league team one way or the other. I think the Floyd will be too. And so it's really figuring out who's going to be starting and who's going to be pitching in relief. I think Chavez will be in the bullpen to start the season. I think Hutchison's in Buffalo to start the season. And I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that it's Floyd or Sanchez for that matter. I do think the next couple of weeks will play a role in that, because there's still discussions to be had. The front office clearly likes Floyd. That's why they brought him in. That's why they gave him a major league deal. But Sanchez is going to have something to say about this. And so I'm not necessarily as far down the line as you know, it's going to be Floyd. I think you're right. I think that Floyd maybe has an inside edge on this one. I think that he's the favorite for the starting job. But Sanchez continues to look really good. And so especially if Estrada needs a little bit more time, if there is a back issue that pops up and they need to open with a couple starters, maybe we end up seeing both of these guys in that scenario.
Decent problem to have, having two guys battling for the fifth rotation spot and both looking great, right? Like, that, you know, a pretty good situation. Like, Gavin Floyd has looked really good, striking guys out. You know, his first start, he had trouble with his command, and that's because his foot was slipping off the mound. And ever since that start in, like, it was in Bradenton, ever since then, he's been fine. Aaron Sanchez looks great. You know, looks like his curveball has gotten better. His velocity has gotten better with the weight that he's put on and with the added, you know, stability, I guess you could call it. You know, and with the work that he did this offseason at Duke, he looks great. So, you know, and the thing is, Blue Jays, you know, are going to use 10, 11, 12 starting pitchers this year. I mean, I think maybe there's a scenario where both these guys make starts. I don't know, though. Like, if you put Aaron Sanchez in the bullpen to start the season, maybe just ride him out through the bullpen there and get him up to 70, 75 innings.
Right, especially because Hutchison will be at AAA. He'll be ready if they need someone. And I would think that Hutchison should succeed at AAA, given that he has major league experience. He's succeeded at the big league level. You'd think that he would be positioned to come up and make starts. Chavez will make starts for this team, probably 10 or 15 by the time it's all said and done as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, it is too bad for Aaron Sanchez, who's a guy who really wants to start, as we said. But, you know, it doesn't look like there's room for it.
I wonder. I think that this is where, you know, we say spring training results don't matter. This is where it actually does matter. And so I'll be really interested to see how the rest of their springs unfold, Sanchez and Floyd, and how sharp they look, what kind of swings and misses they're getting. I think this is one case where I think the Blue Jays will be watching closely, and I'll definitely be watching closely to see how they fare.
I'll make another bold prediction. If Kevin Pillar stays healthy this year, he's going to hit leadoff for the Toronto Blue Jays 155 times.
Wow. That's very bold.
Yeah.
That's very bold.
That's what I think is going to happen.
So here's the... I mean, I think it's very safe to say he's gonna be the leadoff hitter out of spring training.
Right.
And this is, I mean, you look, it's funny. Michael Saunders, who is apparently in the mix for a leadoff spot,
yeah.
He's hit second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. He has never batted leadoff. Not once. So you're telling me this guy's in the leadoff mix. Okay. I'm not sure I believe that. Pillar, yeah. Meanwhile, bats leadoff every time he plays. So Kevin Pillar will be the leadoff hitter out of spring training. That much is clear.
Right.
Now, how long does he stay in that mix? I think one of John Gibbons' strengths has been that he's been willing to move away from a plan if it doesn't work.
Right.
So if Kevin Pillar starts in that role and doesn't succeed, I think they'll switch it up.
Interesting. Well, the thing is, yeah, maybe if Devin Travis comes back in, you know, May, June, whenever that is, if we ever even hear from him again, maybe then he could come back because he showed he had success in that role. I don't think that Kevin Pillar's not a prototypical leadoff hitter by any means. He's not really a guy that you'd like to have there, I guess. But I mean, you know, we're talking about one at bat, really. We're talking about the first inning. And I do think there is some value to having that guy there for the first at bat of the game to take some pitches and to show Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion and Troy Tulowitzki and Josh Donaldson what the pitcher is throwing in terms of velocity, in terms of movement, just like what he has on the mound, just any kind of information that they can pick up. And that first at bat is going to be helpful. But you know, after that, you're just another guy in the lineup. To me, there isn't, in terms of like a table setting role, there isn't that much difference in Kevin Pillar hitting eighth or ninth and hitting first.
Clearly, you know, the Jays don't have a prototypical leadoff hitter right now.
They don't.
So if Pillar starts the season in that role, he has some room for improvement. He's hitting the minor leagues. Let's see what he has. I mean, there are much crazier options out there than trying out a guy who showed a lot of progress last year and has some of the attributes you look for in a leadoff hitter. Not all of them, certainly, but he has some of them. I, give him a shot. See how it works out. And if it doesn't work out, I think they'll back off. I'm not sure that they're going to be married to that idea for 150, 160 games.
The conflict is that Kevin Pillar is a swinger. And what makes him good as a ball player is he gets a lot of hits because he goes up there to swing. And he's got a plan. He's going to swing. He's going to try to put the ball in play. And that's how he gets hits. And that's fine. You can be that guy. I think in the first at bat of the game, you need to take a few pitches. That's something you'd like to see. Last year, Kevin Pillar swung at 41% of the pitches he saw outside the strike zone. Major league average, 30. So that's a number for me that has to come down. And maybe you just ask him, you say, look, Kevin, you're not swinging until you got a strike or something like that, right? And you can tell him something like that. But what's the thing with Alcides Escobar? He swings always at the first pitch, right? Yeah. there's different strategies the guys will use, you know, out of that leadoff spot. There's no one else. It's the thing. There's no one. Michael Saunders isn't a candidate, I don't think. He's simply not.
There's one candidate, and it's Kevin Pillar. That's it. He's going to bat leadoff.
And it's Kevin Pillar. And so, but like if they had to move off of him during the season, other than Devin Travis, who would it be?
I mean, you could go to Saunders.
Yeah.
You could go to Russell Martin, a pick that I threw out there a couple months ago and never got any traction.
Well, with Russell Martin, do you like it at a home game where he has to catch the first inning and then go take the first at bat in the bottom of the first? How do you feel about that?
To me, he's a major league catcher. Yeah. You know, this guy's taking such a beating anyway. Right. No matter where you hit him in the lineup, he's going to be getting foul balls off the mask and, you know, one bouncer's off the shin all season long. If he has to take off his catcher pads a little early or a little late, I don't know how much that changes things. He's taking a beating no matter what.
Suck it up, Russell.
No, it's Come not on. So much yeah. that. It's just that he's going to have to. That's part of the job description of being a major league catcher. And, you know, again, this is me looking at the game from too far of a remove, and maybe I'm missing something in suggesting this, but I don't know. Catchers take such a beating anyway. Is it that much more to pile on? I don't know.
It is interesting to like kind of put on the kid gloves with a guy who like takes 100 mile an hour like ricochets like off his face. Right?
That's
like,
his job description. That he's catching Aaron Sanchez two seamers all day long, and okay, he has to go out there and adjust his chest protector a little earlier, a little later. So again, I'm leaving open the possibility that I'm missing something. That players would know and say, listen, this, and John Gibbons is a former catcher, would know what the challenges are of of trying to hit and play defense at the same time. But from the outside looking in, that would be my perspective.
Could be the mental thing. Could be getting just a slight mental break even, right? Like it's going from that mental mind frame of thinking about game calling and thinking about pitches and setting up hitters to, you know, what's the time? It's a 2 minute and 30 second clock, right? Between, so 2 minutes, 30 seconds later, you have to be thinking about your approach at the plate. Thinking about, okay, what's this guy throw? What's he have? You know, you don't get that kind of break to kind of recalibrate. But I don't know, like throughout the season, there's going to be, like you can't, that's the thing with leadoff hitter, you can't control when he comes up after the first inning. So there's going to be inevitably innings where he's leading off after, you know, catching. Inevitably.
It happens. And to your point earlier, it's that one at bat in the game, you know what's going to happen. Beyond that, you're shuffling the deck and Martin could be batting fourth in an inning. Or there are times in the season when Russell Martin is the first hitter of an inning.
I'm coming around, damn it. Russell Martin, leadoff hitter.
All right. There we go.
No, I'm on it. I don't know why I had the kid gloves on.
350, 355 OBP in his career. I mean, this is someone who gets on base. That's his, you know, you could say power, maybe on base. Those are his biggest skills as a hitter.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's baseball. Things happen. Put him out there. You see Cueto last night?
Take a liner off the head.
Right? First pitch of the game. Quick pitch. Bang.
Yeah.
Hits his head. The next time the ball hits the ground, it's in center field. True, like a true hop off his skull into center field.
He pitched three innings.
The trainer comes out and Cueto points at his head. It's like, no, really? Like, is that where you got it? And like the most one-sided conversation, like I don't think I saw Johnny Cueto say a word even to the trainer. And they're just like, yeah, no, $130 million man. Like, yeah, pitch three innings.
If there's ever a time to take a guy out of the game, you'd think it would be that.
Spring training. Like he's throwing three innings in spring training. Like take him out. Like how much money did you just invest in this guy?
Yeah.
The guy just took a 100 mile an hour liner off his brain. Yeah, no, like stay in there. And then after the game, Bochy's like, oh yeah, we're going to like, you know, keep him under medical supervision for a couple days just for like symptoms of concussion. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Take him out of the game.
Yeah, exactly. That was spring training. If he feels great, put him in there a couple days later, right?
Right. Yeah, back off a couple of the scrubs who, you know, aren't going to be making the team, right? And yeah, put quite, that was the most bizarre thing.
Yeah, that's truly bizarre.
Absolutely. Anyway, just as we were on the topic of guys getting struck in the face by fastballs, that was the thing. There's no natural segue into this. Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah, you wrote about him.
I did write about him. I wrote about him a long time ago in the magazine. It just came out recently. The thing, here's my thing on Troy Tulowitzki. At this time last year, I don't think Blue Jays fans really understood who Josh Donaldson was.
Yeah.
Right? Like at this time last year, it was still kind of like the, oh my God, he traded Brett Laurie. You know, like there was still kind of that thing. And then Josh Donaldson went out and was an MVP, and it was like, oh, wow, this guy's like really, really good. I feel like that's Troy Tulowitzki right now, where I feel like Blue Jays fans don't necessarily appreciate just how good he is. And there's a quote in the story from Josh Donaldson where he says, yeah, Troy Tulowitzki is like the best shortstop in baseball. I think people forget that. And I kind of think that's where Blue Jays fans are right now with Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah, I think you're right. And not just on track record where you're looking at 10 years of offensive dominance, but even if you're looking at present skills, he's a very good defensive shortstop. He's a very good offensive shortstop. Okay, maybe you take Carlos Correa, but Tulo is right up there in terms of shortstops in the game. And I agree. I think Blue Jays fans are going to be very surprised. And it seems like Donaldson is kind of clued into that as someone who's spent a ton of time with Troy Tulowitzki.
Absolutely. And I think Donaldson, who went through basically what Troy Tulowitzki is going through right now, you know, with an unexpected trade, with, you know, trying to get used to Toronto as an organization. This is going through his first spring training with Toronto. Josh Donaldson went through his first spring training with Toronto last year. I think there's definitely kind of a kindred kind of thing there, you know, between them, where they kind of understand what each other has been through, both being, you know, top elite talents in this game. You know, the interesting thing about Troy Tulowitzki is, like, he's not a guy who's playing for a contract anymore. You know, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, and Josh Donaldson, all still playing to get paid. Like, they all still haven't gotten their really big paydays. Troy Tulowitzki got his. All he's playing for now is a ring.
Yeah.
And he's really motivated by it. You talk to guys in that clubhouse. There's a quote from Kevin Pillar in the story where he's like, yeah, like a guy who's, you know, done what he's done in the game and has made his kind of money, you wouldn't think that he would be this, like, consumed with winning and wanting to win and wanting to get better every single day, but he truly is.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And it seems like, you know, it comes through in your piece, and it comes through at spring training. For a guy who was described at times as a robot last year, and certainly
described on this very podcast as a robot,
he seems to be showing a little bit more personality, and maybe that's a result of feeling more comfortable in Toronto.
Oh, the comfort level is definitely, definitely increased. I think he knows his teammates better. He knows just how things work with the Blue Jays. Like, he knows the organization better. He knows the staff, you know, like, he just kind of, that's something, you know, it's like starting a new job, right? Like, think about, you know, anybody, accountants, doctors, firefighters, whatever. You start a new job at a new city, you know, with all new people. Like, there's an adjustment period naturally for anybody. It's the same thing for ball players.
Yeah. Where's the break room? Where's the trainer's room?
Totally.
All that stuff.
For sure. It's totally the same thing. And you notice, like, this year at spring, like, there's just, or, you know, last year, like, Troy Tulowitzki wasn't on an island by any means, but, you know, he really got along with Josh Donaldson. And then really, you know, I didn't see too many conversations between him and other guys in the clubhouse last year.
Like, and he was hurt for part of it too.
He was hurt. Yeah. Like, you know, he was slumping at the plate, and, you know, he really wasn't pleased with that. This year, I mean, it seems like every day in Dunedin around his locker, there's like 5-6 guys, and they're all talking about hitting. They're all foam rolling together, and they're all, you know, chatting, and, like, it is different. It's so hard. You can't quantify this stuff. You never want to read too much into it, but I think there is a difference there between last year and this year for Troy Tulowitzki.
It's a huge difference, I think. And I don't know how that's going to translate on the field, but if you look at the numbers that he posted in Toronto versus his track record, that alone would suggest that he's in for a huge bounce back compared to what we saw late last season. And then you consider, as you write about in your article, he's put in tons of time. He seems to be feeling good physically, certainly. There's no indication as far as his performance or anything he said that he's anything less than 100% out there on the field, which has been a question for him in the past. Then you add on the comfort factor. I think there are a lot of reasons to expect really big things from Tulowitzki.
Let me throw out a quick over-under at you. Troy Tulowitzki, 2016 OPS, set the over-under at 900.
I'll take the under, but I wouldn't take it by much. And I think even the fact that you would put the OPS at 900 for a shortstop,
that's fair,
where the league OPS is probably something like 640.
It's probably gross. Yeah. It's probably disgusting.
I'll look it up now. It's probably around 640.
Troy Tulowitzki career OPS 877.
Yeah. I'd put it around 877 for him. Yeah. You know, in that ballpark.
Give me over 900. I guess coming from Coors, still give me over 900.
You would take the over.
Give me the over.
Wow.
Troy Tulowitzki, big year. I'm in the tank for Troy Tulowitzki this year. I think he's going to have a massive year.
Wow.
Like, he's going to have a really big year. I think Jose Bautista is going to have a monstrous year, like a year unlike we have ever seen. And those are the two things that I feel safe in saying. Also, that Gavin Floyd's going to be fifth starter and Kevin Pillar is going to lead off.
Really going on a limb with the Pillar leadoff.
Just mad, mad predictions today for me.
Yeah.
Give me the over on that.
We got to do a whole over under at some point.
Well, we'll do it again. We'll get producer Sam McKee on it. And we'll do that again. That was good last year.
That was fun.
It's interesting that because, like, Troy Tulowitzki's the 877 career OPS, I mean, last year really kind of dragged it down. Last year he was at 777. 2014, only played 91 games, 1,035 OPS in 2014.
Wow. Yeah.
He's a really, really good hitter.
That's crazy.
Year before that, 2013, in 126 games, 931 OPS.
And for anyone thinking that, oh, he has home road splits from Coors, the thing is, Coors helps you at home. Coors messes with hitters on the road.
For sure.
And one of my favorite stat on this is that for the last, I think it's 10 or 15 years, Rockies lead all teams in home scoring, and they are last in all teams in road scoring. If you're a Rockies hitter, you are awful on the road because of the way balls move in the thin air. So Tulo is much better than his road numbers would indicate, and I think that that's going to show up this year. I wouldn't go quite as high as 900. I think he's going to be really good. And just for the record, shortstops last year, 682 OPS. I sold them short, 682.
Still, Troy Tulowitzki is going to blow that out of the water.
Blow it out of the water.
I think even by most conservative of estimates, he's going to be in the 800s in terms of OPS, I would say. A healthy Troy Tulowitzki, which is always a thing. Troy Tulowitzki, can he stay healthy? We'll see. All right, and that'll be it for us on At The Letters this week. Thanks for coming along. As always, thanks to producer Sam McKee at Sam A. McKee on Twitter. I'm at Arden Zwelling on Twitter. Ben's at B. Nicholson Smith on Twitter. Stay tuned, sportsnet.ca. I'm sure there's plenty of excellent stuff coming up there as spring winds down. Yes, Ben?
Yes, as always. Yeah. But in particular this week, Jeff Blair's down there. Mike Wilner's down there. We still have stuff trickling out from our time in Dunedin. So stay tuned at sportsnet.ca.
Absolutely. Stay tuned to that. Stay tuned to At The Letters. Thanks for coming along. This has been ATL.